On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Knocked Up. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do listen without having seen the film, just be aware that the plot will be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
Hello.
There you are. So you said for some reason I wasn't there. Yes. So it's like a ghost call.
I joined the call and it said I'm the only person there. It's like, is there some parallel dimension?
This sounds like one of those bad films in that sort of genre that's emerged in the last 5 to 10 years of, ooh, social media bad. Maybe it's facilitating murders and ghosts and shit. Wow. the first of which, actually, was Swim Fan. Did you ever see Swim Fan?
Yeah, Swim Fan. The tight psychological thriller for the modern idiot.
And I remember watching that in school and thinking it was quite good.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't watched it since, but it had that kind of psychological thriller vibe that you kind of saw in movies in the 50s and 60s. But
where everybody was talking like this.
And they were chewing on tobacco.
That's just our generic voice for any film before like the 80s. Everybody talking like this in the olden times.
Before 2005, everybody talked like that. Yeah. Oh, you want to join the Matrix, do you, Neo?
Where we're going, we don't need roads. We're going to need a larger ship.
Where's all the rum gone, say?
When you gotta go, you gotta go. That's the best line in Jurassic Park.
That is the best line. Apart from maybe Clever Girl. I love that Clever Girl line. So I love Jurassic Park. Have we talked about how much I love Jurassic Park?
I feel like we have talked about Jurassic Park on this podcast, but we haven't talked about how much you love it. So please do. I am all ears for that. Which brings me to, did dinosaurs have ears? Because every time you look at a dinosaur, I'm not seeing any ears.
I think it's the same situation as your average lizard, isn't it? Or bird.
That's a good point. Birds don't have ears either. I've literally never thought of this. My mind is blown.
That's why you can say boo to a goose, because they can't hear you.
Oh, yeah. They can just see you and get really, really angry.
Yeah, they get really angry because they can see you.
But why are they honking then if they've got no ears? What's the point in all that? Or the ruckus that they cause?
Because they're arseholes, Paddy.
Everyone knows that, yeah. Geese are the worst people on the planet.
Yeah, absolute geese.
I would hate to be a goose.
Nobody wants to be a goose.
A gosling, fine, I'll take it.
I'm not too sure.
A Ryan Gosling.
Gosling or a Reynolds, who would you rather be? I think Reynolds seems to have more fun.
I don't know. Ryan Gosling's not bad. He's a jazz man in La La Land, and then he gets to go to the moon in First Man. You know, he's all over the place.
He gets to violently attack people and drive cars in Drive.
That sounds like the kind of thing you would enjoy. Those are your hobbies.
I love kicking people in the head and driving cars. The two things that define who I am as a person.
I mean, it's the only reason I befriended you, to be honest, because I knew that we had that in common.
I was there at uni and you saw me just beating the crap out of someone and then getting into a rusty old Fiat and driving off. And I was like, that's the kind of man I want to be friends with.
Yeah, the rusty Fiat guy. And everyone was like, who's the rusty Fiat guy? Oh my God. He's crazy.
The rusty Fiat guy? And then he's intense.
It was like the beginning of When Harry Met Sally, when Billy Crystal is like 40, but clearly 40, and he's wearing a denim jacket and a t-shirt that says college. You're wearing a shirt that said college.
I was wearing a shirt that said Fiat.
Yeah, Fiat 500.
So Swim Fan.
Yeah.
Swim Fan.
Not this week's film, but let's talk about it, because it's an interesting film that I feel like people have probably forgotten about it.
Yeah, I think they have. So it's
looking
about
at it now, I can't remember any of the cast or names that I don't recognise. Jesse Bradford, Erica Christensen, Shiri Appleby. Who are these people?
It's got Dan Hedaya in it, though, who's the coach.
Dan Hedaya. I'm looking at him now. Oh, yeah, him. Oh, he was a rookie of the year.
The clueless dad, the evil dictator in Arnold Schwarzenegger's Commando.
Plug for my other podcast while we're on the subject of rookie of the year. that was one of the films that we discussed recently on Big Boys Don't Bunt. So go and listen to that if you want to hear me and my friends Sam and Rosie talking about Rookie of the Year, which is a very silly kids baseball film.
If you want to hear in-depth Dan Hedaya chat, go check it out.
Yeah, we talk really in-depth about Dan Hedaya.
5 hours of Dan Hedaya.
The guy whose name I definitely knew until just now. Just now.
I'm a low-key fan of Dan Hedaya. I don't think I've seen something with him in that I haven't enjoyed.
Excellent.
So yeah, he's a good one. But yeah, so swim fan. High school swimming, psychological thriller, kind of trashy. Got a bit of a like Cruel Intentions vibe, but not as good, I suppose.
But hasn't it got some internet thing going on?
It does have the internet. The internet is bad.
I believe, if I'm correct, it's the first film to have the internet in it.
Yeah, nothing else before that had the internet.
No.
Never, did not exist. You've Got Mail, Get Out. That was talking about letters.
Yeah, not real.
Literal snail mail. Do you remember when they used to call mail snail mail? And it was like, look at your email or your snail mail. So, okay.
Snail mail is very funny. It's the same as people who, like, whenever they mention the name of a political party, will call them, like, will do a pun. So, like, the LIBOR party or the Fib Dems or Tony B. Liar or whatever. It's those kind of people who call it snail mail.
Tony B. Liar is the best one of all of those.
Because he lied about Iraq, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to find him and perform a citizen's arrest. Never mind, you know, the European elections today. I didn't even bother to vote because I was out looking for Tony Blair to perform a citizen's arrest.
You were so angry about the Labour Party and so angry about the Lib Dems that you had no choice but to vote for Brexit.
Yeah. Or should I say, the Brexit Party.
Fucking dickheads, aren't they? Yeah. Let's be honest here.
In a serious note, I did vote. We went to the Village Hall, as previously mentioned on this podcast, which is actually, now that we've been inside it a couple of times, it's lovely.
Oh,
very nice. I'm a big fan.
Very good. Very good. I voted as well. I did my usual thing of voting in the most tactical manner to stop the fash from getting in.
Yes,
which is how I vote in every election.
The only choice ever available to the British voter.
Yeah, we don't have the option to vote for who we want to win. We have to vote for who we don't. You vote for who's going to stop the people you hate from getting in.
Least worst twat. That's British politics
in three words. Or rather, even if it's the second worst twat, it's the twat to stop the biggest twat from getting in.
Yeah.
It is the way it goes, unfortunately. But Brexit Party, you know, aside from the politics of it all, fucking stupid name for a party. I mean, it's very clever because people who go, I like Brexit, I'm going to vote for Brexit Party. So it's not even a fucking word, guys. Brexit isn't a real word.
It's not in the dictionary, is it?
It may well be in the dictionary by now. It's certainly in the thesaurus, isn't it?
Have you seen the dictionary? There's some right shit in there.
There is some terrible stuff in the dictionary. The. What's that?
Yeah. Yes. What kind of word is that?
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
But yeah, the Brexit, I mean, they used to say that UKIP were a single issue party, but the Brexit Party is literally in the name.
Yes. And in a bad name. Also, we don't know where their money comes from and they have no policies. So sketchy AF.
Yep. You're the Southeast region too, right?
Yes.
So we were voting, weirdly, we live in different counties, but we were voting for the same region because that's how the European elections work. Did you notice that one of the UKIP candidates is called Pat Mountain?
Pat Mountain.
Which I just thought sounds like a baseball player from the 1920s. Hey, truck. I'm Pat Mountain. it would have been someone on the Bobson Dugnutt list. to be fair, the list of UKIP candidates was more Bobson Dugnutt than the Bobson Dugnutt list.
But I do wonder if, because in the previous election, I voted for Greg Mountain, who was the Labour candidate in Mid-Sussex. Mm. And I wonder if Doug and Greg Mountain are related at all. Do you reckon there's...
Doug Mountain. No, it was Pat Mountain.
Pat Mountain.
Maybe
he should have been called Doug Mountain.
Maybe Pat Mountain was his wife and they're the opposing parties.
Yeah, a very awkward dinner.
Yeah, because I looked it up and Pat Mountain is female. That's the thing with the
name. So it's not Pat. A Patrick. It's a Patricia. No.
Yep. I'm glad that it's not someone who shares my name.
Let's have a little look at Pat Mountain now.
Not much comes up when you Google her, but there's a lot. I think she's from Brighton and just makes like or that region, and just talks shit about car parks or whatever.
Not even the most famous Pat Mountain. Pat Mountain is a Welsh former professional footballer who is working at Forest Green Rovers as a goalkeeping coach. Oh. He is the most famous. Well done, Pat Mountain.
He sounds good.
The perfect example of keeping the fash out on the internet.
Yeah. European elections, weird time. Did you hear that apparently loads of like EU citizens were turned away because they were supposed to have filled in some form that nobody told them about?
Yes, and even the ones that did fill in the form, it turns out that the government didn't start processing them until after the deadline.
Yeah, which is so, just like so illegal and
so big awful. Old voter suppression going on in this great democracy of ours.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, taking back control, more democracy, yeah. Like that's literally the opposite of democracy, and people who want the people who say like, oh, we have to do Brexit because it's democracy. This is a prime example of how that's just the stupidest shit I've ever heard.
And, you know, I'm not one for conspiracy theories, apart from the greats like Flat Earth, obviously.
Oh.
But
and don't P is stored in the balls.
And P is stored in the balls. That is a science fact. I heard it on The Big Bang Theory, backed up by a Bazinga shirt.
Factual, long-running television program, The Big Bang Theory.
It's where I go for all of my topical jokes.
Where I learned everything jokes. About science.
Exactly. But, you know, it does strike me as a bit suspicious that a demographic which actually has quite a large population of the UK... who was going to vote primarily for non-Brexit-based parties, suddenly is disenfranchised through supposed incompetence.
Weird that.
I find that a little bit strange, not going to lie.
Yeah, I wonder how many EU citizens living in the UK will vote for the Brexit party.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah, I find it a little bit suspicious, not going to lie. But you know, we're going to have Brexit people in. It's kind of inevitable. Going to be a load of Brexit people, and then when we leave the European Union in November, 1st of November, they're all going to get kicked out.
Yeah, and then they're all probably going to complain about it, which will be the most delicious, hilarious irony. I've lost my job now. I can't afford to pay my mortgage. Yeah, well, you knew that was going to happen. Yeah.
Yes. So terrible situation all round.
Yep. Very but terrible.
That's, but that's voting in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah. That's voting in the UK.
So swim fan, right? Yeah. I'm not ready to talk about.
Not
talk
this
about.
Week's film, but it might as well be at this point.
I think I would rather talk about swim fan.
Hit it.
But
I can't really remember it. I just remember that it had internet and I thought that was clever.
But looking at the soundtrack, it is full of some classics of the early 2000s. You have got...
Does it have... What's that one by Nickelback? No Mirrors of Pan Man.
No, it does not, but it does have Default, which A, is a terrible band name, and B,
Default.
Is the Canadian hard rock band that Chad Kroeger discovered.
What?
Do you remember Default?
No, I do not. They're Canadian, so I should know them.
They're a kind of grungy Canadian rock band.
Associated Acts, Chad Kroeger.
Yeah, and Associated Acts, Nickelback. So he discovered them, and then they released a lot of middling rock songs that were fine.
Yeah.
So there is a Nickelback.
I'm looking at this. I don't recognize any of the acts apart from Seven Dust and Ash. Ash are a great band.
Seven Dust, also Saliva. Do you remember Saliva?
No.
The guy from Saliva is the other guy that sings on the Spider-Man song with Nickelback.
Oh. All roads lead to Chad Kroeger.
Yeah. How many steps away from Chad? So there's
6
heavy...
degrees of Kroeger.
Is that his body temperature?
Yeah, you got to keep him really, really cold. It's good that it's cold in Canada.
They just pack in with ice before shows.
Yeah.
That's why there's so much dry ice at the shows, is that they actually have to put it in his shoes so that the cold of it maintains.
Otherwise, he'll die.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really serious.
Yeah, and then Ash, who are cool. Yeah. I remember liking Ash.
Excellent band.
Yeah, they were really good fun. And yeah, they were. I miss Ash. Wonder what they're up to.
I think they do still exist, but Charlotte Hatherley left them some time ago, and integral member. Well, it was three. They were a three piece, weren't they?
Yeah,
and then a four piece, I think, for a time. But yes, she's not in them anymore. But I think they do still tour.
Okay. Well, I might check their stuff out.
Yeah,
I remember really loving a couple of their early albums when I was a young'un.
Yeah, Girl from Mars, banger. Burn, Baby, yes. Burn, banger. Very
and,
good.
What was the one with the cars? They were driving cars around fast in the desert. I'm going to say desert. I can't remember the name of it, but there was fast cars in a desert.
I can't remember it. Was it called Top Gear?
We're a band called Ash.
Oh, yeah. That was their biggest hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or as Top Gear is now called, the Grand Tour, which is somehow 1,000 times worse.
More like the Grand Bore.
Oh. We're currently rewatching Parks and Recreation, and like it's on Amazon Prime, and every so often it like you have to watch a trailer in between it, and it's always the one for the Grand Tour, and it's always the same, and I hate it so much.
I reviewed the game of the Grand Tour.
There's a game of the Grand Tour.
Yeah, it's like an episodic racing game. Where
why?
Often...
Why?
I like racing games.
No, but like, why does it exist?
Why does it exist? I'm not sure.
Who's buying that shit?
So the Grand Tour trio, they do your little bits of voiceover here and there, and then there's footage from the show in between the little bits of racing, and it's almost like little mini bits of racing. So it's so some of it's kind of Mario Kart-esque, where you're driving around a circuit. And
right.
Then you get things like you get a power up, which rather than the ink coming up on the screen like in Mario, it's like texts from the other people saying like you're well rubbish, mate, blue, and it obscures your view, or stuff like that. But then there's also more straightforward racing and time attack and things.
Sounds awful.
It was fine, I guess. It wasn't particularly inspiring. But then I'm a big fan of racing games.
Are you a big fan of racist games?
Yes.
If so, you'll love the Grand Tour.
There's a distinct lack of racist stuff in the game. You'll be pleased to know.
0 out of 20.
0 out of 20. Not enough racism. So I was. I'm trying to think of a good segue into Knocked Up.
Yeah, I haven't talked about babies or anything at all.
No, how is your baby?
He's good, yeah.
Still being
good.
A little dude.
I assume sleeping right now. But yeah, he's good. He came with us to vote. Obviously, he wasn't allowed to vote, which is a shame. But, you know, he'll be old enough soon enough.
Absolute suppression there.
I know.
Give the babies votes.
I know. Votes for babies. You get all these tea towels, all this stuff saying votes for women. We've got that. Where's the votes for babies?
Yeah, where's the votes for babies?
Yeah.
That's what I'm after.
So, yeah. But yeah, he's doing really good. He's
excellent.
In great shape. So yeah, I'm still on leave, so it's good. I'm around hanging out with my baby all the time. It's the best. I'm really enjoying it.
Fantastic. So one might say that with your current free-flowing lifestyle, you have a lifestyle similar to our main guy in Knocked Up. How's that for a segue?
I'm definitely researching films that have nudity in them to build a website database of them. And I live with all of my blokey friends who smoke weed all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's how it works. That's what I'm doing.
It's all a front.
Yeah. It's all a front. I smoke weed every day.
So Knocked Up, I remember vaguely enjoying when I first watched it, however many years ago, and being struck by the fact that it occasionally had a heartfelt message alongside the idiocy. Rewatching it, I was not as enthralled by this film.
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty fair, actually. There were bits of it that I really enjoyed, and I was still pleasantly surprised by how heartfelt some of it was and by how funny some of it was. But yeah, you're right. Ultimately, it does still feel a bit flat and a bit dated. And I wanted to like it, but it really started to drag towards the end. And you're like, as it lumbered towards its inevitable conclusion, because it had sort of done all the gags about halfway through, and then it was all, you know, just come on, tie up the plot and get it done. But it was like, here's the same gag over and over again. Yes, his mates are louts and they're stupid, and oh, look, now they're making fun of disabled people, haha, you know.
Yeah, and that's something that I find very funny here, is that there's that very lad based humor in this film that's kind of missing from the other movies of its ilk. Which might be why it's perhaps aged not as well. So there's a lot of homophobic humor.
Yeah.
And you're partly supposed to be laughing at them because they're useless idiots. But at the same time, it's a kind of camaraderie that was aimed at the target demographic of this film, really.
That's the thing. It's like the pub landlord, isn't it?
Precisely, yeah. But I wonder how much of it is... Because, you know, I mean, the perfect example of this is Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You are specifically supposed to think that they're awful people, and the vast majority of the fan base of Always Sunny recognizes that it doesn't really accumulate that fan base of people that think, haha, what they said is well funny because it's really funny and I'm a lad. Whereas with Knocked Up, I think there's still that sense, and maybe it's because it was from 12 years ago, that kind of humor is still funny, or at the time it was seen as being funny for that kind of lad-based culture.
Yeah, I think like they were trying hard to, and Judd Apatow, you know, he's a smart man, he knows what he's doing, but with all this stuff he's trying to satirize bro culture, but by sort of being so invested in it, it almost goes too far the other way. I feel like the whole time it walks a tightrope of satirizing bro culture and then just sort of outright endorsing bro culture.
Precisely. And I think that's where Catherine Heigl's comments at the time, or Heigl, I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
I thought it was Heigl.
We'll go with Heigl because you are almost invariably correct on that. Where she obviously got a lot of criticism because she said that she felt that the movie was a little bit sexist in its portrayal of women versus men. And you can kind of see both sides of the coin there, because I think the movie does a decent job of representing the sort of female dynamic between her character Alison and Debbie, played by Leslie Mann, where they feel very genuine, but at the same time there is that real focus on the fun guy aspect as well. And so you can kind of see where she's coming from, and I think that's maybe where the film falls down a little bit in terms of rewatches, because you compare it to things like The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which you know isn't the perfect movie, but it's still a lot funnier than Knocked Up, I think.
Yeah.
Or films like Anchorman, for instance, or I mean the perfect example of this is Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which we watched on this podcast.
Yeah, but that is still also stars good. Jason Segel, but also has the musical humor.
Yeah,
which yes. Really works.
But like in terms of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, that manages to have the kind of screwball comedy elements and the heartfelt message interwoven in a much better way than Knocked Up. And it's aged much, much better, in my opinion, than Knocked Up has. Not to say that I didn't enjoy Knocked Up, but it felt like it was a little bit more dated and felt a little bit more jarring on this rewatch.
Definitely, yeah. And that's an interesting comparison, actually. I hadn't compared it to Forgetting Sarah Marshall in my head at all, but you're right, the screwball aspect of that film is what makes it work, whereas that's something that's absent from Knocked Up. All of the humour in Knocked Up is at somebody's expense.
Yes, yeah. But it's an interesting film, I suppose.
It's not a bad film, though, I will say. I think it's competent, and it is funny, and it is heartfelt, and it does just about work. It's just a little bit dated, and some of the humour misses the mark, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's maybe straddled the... there's almost this Generation X feel too Knocked Up in the way that it portrays its young characters, the kind of waster culture.
I was going to say it's 2007, so it's just before the financial crash, when it's like everyone thinks that everything's fine and like you can just have a house with all of your bros and none of them seem to work or do anything and they somehow seem to have money for everything and they're slackers. And it's like, yeah, after 2007, 2008, that just would never happen. So that's sort of a bit that's kind of grates a bit now as well.
Yeah, that whole kind of like slacker culture thing, it is a very like early 90s to mid 90s idea of what guys do. Whereas you're completely right that kind of idea has very much evaporated, and you very rarely see it being portrayed in films anymore. or in media in general, like the kind of Clerks aspect or films yeah. like that. It feels very, very dated for people who have never had the opportunity to just sit around and do nothing like that, apart yep. from maybe like in their first year of university.
Yeah, if you're lucky these days.
If you're lucky. And so it's fascinating to see how it kind of, it's almost like the pre-millennial idea of humor, where millennial humor, a lot of it is based around, and particularly Gen Y humor as well, a lot of it is based around absurdity. Yep. And you look at like the growth of meme culture and how meme culture has kind of taken over every kind of medium almost.
Yeah, for
where,
sure.
Where even within like even within TV shows or movies, they're looking for that tiny snippet that's gifable.
Yeah, what's that popular show? Meme of Thrones.
Meme of Thrones, exactly. All about who gets to go viral on the internet for sitting on a chair.
Yeah, Simon Cowell is there, and he's got some other scary people. Simon Cowell, Ryan Seacrest, and Paula Abdul are there, and they're all sitting in chairs, and they're all looking at you, and it's like, right, they're all sitting on thrones, and then everyone comes up, and it's like, here's my meme, and it's a cat dancing on a chair, and they're like, get out.
That's exactly what it is. Well, it's not a dragon dancing on a chair, is it? It's so passé.
Exactly, yeah.
Get out.
If it's not dragons, get out.
And so Knocked Up, it's before that era. It's before that era of absurdity, which I think, you know, precursors to Knocked Up had managed to do it. So Anchorman, the reason that Anchorman's remains so strong as a comedy and how new generations of people are finding it and still finding it funny is because it's got that absurd angle.
Anchorman is memeable, though. That's the thing.
Exactly.
You still get people talking about how their apartment is filled with leather-bound books, or like even just saying, I love lamp and stuff.
Yeah, it's still there.
90% of the time, it works all the time. It's all, yeah, all of that stuff. It's like, I could just reel it off and I haven't even seen it in such a long time.
Precisely. There's something about it, and there's something about that kind of humor that really strikes home, and it strikes home to this day. Whereas I think Knocked Up, it's almost that pre-meme dominated internet culture. And that kind of ties into the whole framework of what the guys are doing in that film, where they're creating this website of where actors are nude. And that's almost like, I mean, that could very much be a mid-2000s website that a bunch of bros set up.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's that kind of pre-Facebook, or, you know, Facebook had been around a little bit by this point, but before it become that all dominating force to be reckoned with. It's that kind of pre-social media dominance, pre-meme dominance, internet culture, which is really interesting to see here. But I think maybe it's to the detriment of the actual comedy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. Look, a lot of the comedy actually really derives from characterization rather than memification, which is an interesting study as well, because so much of it is, yeah, like the bros all just like insulting each other, or people, yeah, trading little lines back and forth. And some of the lines are actually quite funny.
Yes, yeah. There's a kind of, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's like witty dialogue, but there's moments of it that are really funny. And, you know, I do have a very soft spot for Jason Segel's character in this.
He's great. He seems like a very sweet man.
Yeah, sweet.
Excellent facial hair.
A sweet, lechy man. Yeah. But yeah, his character in this is really funny. But I find that, like, when I initially watched it, I didn't have that much time for the bro characters in it anyway. I found a lot of enjoyment from the relationship between Seth Rogen's Ben and Katherine Heigl's Allison.
But I liked it when she told him to go and fuck his bong, and he's like, I will, yes, fuck my bong, doggy style for once. That made me chuckle.
Yeah, and so like their relationship's really funny, and what I found watching it again this time is even less interesting in Jonah Hill and everybody. Jonah Hill in this movie is incredibly irritating.
He is the most obnoxious and horrible of all of them.
Yes.
And it's very disappointing, because actually he has done some good stuff, but he's also done some complete rubbish as well.
Oh yeah, Jonah Hill's great. I really love him.
21 Jump Street. I was pleasantly surprised by him in that.
21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, which you've not seen yet, have you?
I've not.
We will get onto 22 Jump Street. It is bromance central and I love it. Obviously, he's in Moneyball, Wall Street,
which we're watching next on Big Boys Don't Bunt.
About the Moneyball guys.
Yeah, it's about the guy who hit a baseball and it came open and there was all money inside.
It was all the money. It was what's his name? Billy Bean. Was Oakland.
He still is the GM of the Oakland A's, believe
is
it or
he?
Not. Yeah.
Okay. Because then the ideas of Moneyball were taken by the Red Sox, weren't they?
Yep. And now everyone.
And now everybody does it. And then the Moneyball sort of idea was actually kind of ported over to Liverpool Football Club, quite interestingly.
Which initially to
mixed results because there was this clash between the manager and the sort of club financiers and scouts. But now that they've become more aligned, actually, it's been paying massive dividends for Liverpool, who have been making good, smart, small money purchases and then making big splurges in the market where it's possible to do so to fit in for effectively perfect players. And that kind of hybrid system's worked very well for Liverpool.
Yeah, you know, this is pre-Klopp.
So it's started...
Jurgen Klopp looks like a man who manages his finance as well. You know, I think he knows about, like, he's got a good portfolio. He knows about wealth management, you know.
I love him.
He knows his shit. Yeah.
Klopp is the guy who, I think if there's anybody in the UK who I'd want to go and just hang out with for a day, it would probably be Jurgen. I bet he'd take me to a theme park or something.
Oh, can you imagine going on, what's the scary one, Alton Towers?
Oh, yeah, the vertical drop one.
Yeah, can you Stealth.
Oh, Stealth, can you imagine, yeah.
Or is that Thought Park? Yeah,
Who
not
knows?
Up on my theme parks.
Who knows?
But yeah, if Jurgen Klopp, if you're listening, we want to go on Stealth with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, come, Jurgen, let's
That's
not
a euphemism.
Theme park together. I love Jonah Hill, but not in this movie. This movie is not his best moment.
No, it's like every single line of his is either homophobic or ableist or sexist.
Yeah,
it's very
and that's it. And it's just like, oh, okay, come on, get on with it. Yes, we know you're a bro. Bro, 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 bro.
Yeah. And then there's the bro with the beard, and they're all making like jokes about him being a terrorist and stuff, which is very like, oh yeah, we recently had this Iraq war, so everyone's all up on Islamophobia, lol.
Yes, precisely. So instead I found, like, I was never really keen on those characters, but I paid them even less mind this time around and more time on Pete and Debbie's relationship. So Paul Rudd, Leslie Mann.
Mm. I did like Paul Rudd in this, actually.
Yeah, who I found their relationship and I found their characters incredibly interesting. And I know that they were explored more in This Is 40, which is a film that I've never seen.
Me neither.
But I've heard very mixed things about, where some people have really enjoyed it and other people haven't. So I'm actually quite intrigued to watch that now and see how I get on.
I just looked at the poster for This Is 40. Paul Rudd's wearing a Ween t-shirt on it.
Oh, amazing.
The brilliant band that we talked about last time.
Ween. With hits like... I'm riding a donkey. Was there something like that?
Piss up a rope. It was called.
That's the one you sent me.
I'm riding a donkey. That could be one of their songs, to be fair.
It could be, couldn't it? That sounds like one. I've just searched Ween Donkey to see what I'm
Ween Donkey
looking for. There's a song called There's a Pig, apparently.
Yep. There's also a song called Waving My Dick in the Wind.
Mister, would you please help my pony? Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Right. Because the whole joke is that... that's genuine. If you're horny, let's do it. Ride it, my pony. Fun fact. You know how I dine out on the fact that I once opened for Ed Sheeran?
Yes.
In that show, he did a cover of that song that was actually quite good.
Oh, really?
That's cool.
Can he do that again instead of... what's the Irish one that's terrible?
Oh, Galway Girl.
Galway Girl. Ed, if you're listening.
Terrible.
Stop being... Well, he won't be in Game of Thrones
again. Scratch
that
from your back catalogue.
Oh, Paddy, Game of Thrones is over.
I know. Are you sad?
The people are angry and I'm reveling in it.
Oh, they're angry that it's over. I thought they were angry that it was happening, and now they're angry that it's over.
They're angry that it's happening, and they're angry with the final episode. And they're livid. They're furious.
What happened in the final episode? You can tell me because I'm never going to watch it. So, yeah, Game of Thrones spoilers for the next couple of minutes.
Yeah, Game of Thrones spoilers. So, Daenerys Targaryen, the one who blew up a city in the last episode, she's the one with the dragons.
Was she the one who wanted to have sex with her nephew?
Yes, that's right.
Right. See, I'm getting it. I'm remembering it now.
Lots of people loved her character, and kind of rightly so. She had this whole white savior thing going on that a lot of people, I think, kind of overlooked because
right.
they were like, oh, yeah. So she is very, very Aryan. She was touring around the southern parts of the world of Game of Thrones, away from Westeros, which is the main continent, and freeing slaves and stuff like that. And people were like, oh, yeah, she's the breaker of chains. She's going to go and help everybody. But there was also this kind of weird thing about how she used to like burning people alive and crucifying people. And you're like,
that's not so good.
And it was generally like slavers or noblemen. So you're like, eh, rich people, slavers, that's fine. But then over the course of like the later series, she started getting a bit dragon happy with other people, like captured soldiers and things like that. And then in the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones, victory was at hand. The army had surrendered, and Daenerys Targaryen decided, hey, dragon, let's go burn up every civilian in this city. So then the dragon was flying around, burning everybody up. And a lot of fans were like, oh, this is awful. How could they do this to her character? And it's like, well, they did. It's kind of rushed, but it's clearly where they were going to go with this. They laid the groundwork. Admittedly, they'd kind of rushed it in the last series or two. And then basically at the end, she's victorious. She's like, yes, I've got control. And then her nephew lover, obviously not too keen on the whole murdering women and children in the streets by dragon fire.
I can't think why.
It's kind of like, shouldn't have done that. That wasn't very nice. And she says something along the lines of, no, it's fine. You know, we sometimes have to make these decisions in order to make the world a better place. And and Jon Snow, the nephew lover, he goes, oh, that sounded wrong, didn't it?
What did you say about Channel 4 News?
Jon Snow's like, well, how do you know if you're right? What if someone else has a different opinion on what's right? And she basically says something along the lines of, I'm always right. And those people who don't think I'm right are wrong. So, he kisses her and it's a passionate kiss, and then it's the trope of old kissing someone and then you stab him a lot. So he stabs her and she dies.
Stabby kiss.
Then the dragon gets angry, and rather than burning Jon Snow, it burns up the throne, the Game of Thrones throne. In a beautiful moment of very heavy-handed symbolism where it's like, yes, it's all over. The fight for the throne is over. And then the dragon.
Does that mean nobody won the throne?
So interestingly enough, there is a kind of moment where the traditional method of governance in the Game of Thrones universe is destroyed at the end of the show. So after Jon Snow kills Daenerys Targaryen, there's then like a break in time, and then we witness basically all of the noblemen from and all of the people who lead the houses are sitting around. Jon Snow has been captured by Daenerys Targaryen's forces, but hasn't been killed yet. And the rest of them are there, and they're like, well, we're going to decide who leads the country now. And they decide on Bran Stark, who is a kind of savant, I suppose. He is something called the Three-Eyed Raven, which will be very hard to describe to someone who's not seen the show before. But effectively, imagine like a walking, living history book who can also see the future. And travel and like take control of animals and see through their eyes and stuff like that. So he's kind of a psychic, kind of a walking encyclopedia. And there you go.
He's like Dr. Doolittle.
Exactly. Like imagine
Eddie Murphy's Dr. Doolittle.
Imagine Doctor Strange meets Eddie Murphy's Dr. Doolittle. But also he got pushed out of a window in the first episode of Game of Thrones and broke his back. So he's also in a wheelchair. And so he's an interesting character. And they're like, yo, you know loads about history and you'll stop us from repeating it. Why don't you take over the throne? And you've got this amazing story of how, you know, you broke your back and then you went out into the wilds and you became the Three-Eyed Raven and you survived the ice zombies and shit like that. And he sort of goes, yeah, all right, I'll do it. And then they release Jon Snow. Jon Snow fucks off and he's supposed to be guarding up in the north, but instead they let him go free and he goes to run off with his friends.
To Pompeii.
To Pompeii. And so it kind of has a vaguely happy ending, but people are really angry. And
what did they want to happen?
I think a lot of people...
I kind of wish I hadn't asked that, because I'm going to get an answer.
Some people wanted evil fantasy fascist Daenerys Targaryen to win, and that's weird.
Right.
People didn't like the fact that...
That's like those people who are like, oh, the Empire should win in Star Wars. They're better.
Yes, yeah. And
The rebels are Jeremy Corbyn.
And you can kind of understand people wanting Daenerys Targaryen to win because for so long she was seen as the good guy in the show. But one of the things that they were clearly trying to do with Game of Thrones was flip it around and make you think, wait a minute, should we really be rooting for someone who believes in absolute monarchy as much as this? Should we really want someone to have this absolute control in the form of an absolute monarchy? Or should we be looking for something else? And they did it not in a particularly good way because they rushed it. You know, they should have done it over 10 episodes instead of 6. But you could kind of see what they were trying to do there. And I think a lot of people missed the point of that and were thinking, why didn't my favourite take the throne? Also, there's been a lot of criticism from feminists who said, why does Bran get to take the throne? Why isn't it one of the women characters? And why did the woman turn evil? And I think there's been a lot of sexism in Game of Thrones, and I'm not too sure about the final episode being the perfect example of that. There's been a lot of sexist bullshit in Game of Thrones. I don't think necessarily this is the right example, because what they're trying to say is choose someone who doesn't have an absolute monarchist stake in it. Choose someone who is more rational and who can make decisions on behalf of the people everywhere instead of for their own selfish reasons. And he was kind of the only character that could do that, short of making Westeros communist, which I would have been on board with.
Yep. Communist Game of Thrones. That would be the only thing that could make me watch it.
Yes. And also lots of people completely misunderstood certain elements of it at all because they weren't actually watching the show. So it was a enjoyable, trashy heap, and I loved it. And I'm kind of reveling in the anger that so many other people have where they're saying this is the worst, this is the most disappointing moment in television history and stuff like that. It's glorious. It's glorious.
The most disappointing moment in television history.
Yeah.
Surely that was the end of Noel's house party.
Well, exactly. You know, I can't believe that the final episode of Noel's house party was just Noel Edmonds with a sledgehammer just breaking Mr. Blobby's legs. Whilst looking directly into the camera and saying, yeah, this is what you want. This is what you want, you pigs.
You absolute hogs.
Anyway, so that's how Game of Thrones ended. And people are really angry. And I kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was good. And very rarely do shows end in a way that is satisfying. I probably can count, you know, maybe 10 examples of where a TV show has ended where I thought that's a good ending.
Right.
So seeing one that is a pretty decent ending, I'm happy with that.
Endings are hard.
They are, particularly
to be fair.
Particularly when you've been going for so long and there's so much weight on the shoulders of the show to actually deliver something that people want.
Yeah.
I can understand why it is difficult. And I think they kind of pulled it off. And maybe with time, people might be a little bit more sympathetic to it. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't as good as, so like, for instance, Penny Dreadful is a wonderful television show that ended in a very good manner. And it didn't pull that off as such, but it was still all right. It did pretty well. Good 6.5 out of 10. Game of Thrones.
6.5 out of 10. Does it have at any point the song Rock Lobster by the B-52s soundtracking a sex scene?
It doesn't, but that is something that we could certainly create.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, with the wonder of technology, I could create that very quickly, but I don't need to because it happens in Knocked Up.
It does. There's some sex.
I enjoyed
in this
that
movie.
A lot. Yeah, there is.
And again, and it's played kind of in a very. It's one of those rare moments in this movie, and what works so well about it, where it plays it in a very human way, where the humor doesn't come out of quippy one-liners, but instead comes out of the situation and kind of like the entirety of the sort of scene itself.
Yeah. What is really good is actually the cinematography and all that. There's a bunch of different cuts that work really well. Like, it just cuts. There's one point where like she's all like being all nice and prim and proper and talking about doing stuff for the baby or like stuff, and like it's all her very, very nice life with the soft lighting or whatever. And then she's like, oh, I'm gonna have to call Ben and tell him. And then it just cuts to them and they're all like smoking in their bro house. It just cuts to one of them going, I love weed. And, and there's another one where like it just cuts to like his naked bum while he's lying there in her bed as well. And it's stuff like that that actually works really well. It's good with the visual cues, I think.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so I think, I do think that the moments between the two of them work pretty well. I do recognize Catherine Heigl's criticisms where Seth Rogen gets to be the funny one and she has to be the straight one, because a lot of the time is spent laughing at his little jokes. And I don't think that necessarily that's the best part of this film. And I think they could have made more out of what really works, which is their relationship and the developing sort of strands of how they interact with one another.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's all like, oh yeah, he's the funny jokey bro and she's the kind of the boring straight woman. And eventually they obviously, yeah, they do get together and they settle down and he decides to be helpful with the baby and all that stuff at the end is quite tender. But yeah, the film kind of relies on that for its humor, and that's ultimately I think where it's coming from, and that's just a bit dumb.
Yeah, yeah, which is a shame, but I think it works pretty well in terms of their relationship, and I can understand why it made such a surprise when it came out, because you know, off the back of movies like Superbad, you wouldn't necessarily expect this level of maturity in a film like this.
No, no, I'm not going into it expecting it to be Citizen Kane.
No, no. But it does leave a mark like that, and I think there's something to be said about that.
We need to talk about Superbad at some point.
We do need to talk about Superbad at some point. Mainly McLovin and how that became a phenomenon and suddenly disappeared.
Again, memification.
Yeah.
That's like I think a very, very early example of meme culture.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I think because Superbad came out the same year as Knocked Up, but yeah, again, it has those. It's hard to think of lines from Knocked Up which would be quotable in the same way as Superbad, or have those scenes that are immediately as memorable as Superbad scenes, even though perhaps Knocked Up is a better movie.
Yeah,
it's really interesting that way.
Yes, it is. It is interesting. Yeah, I'll give it that. And there are lots of the cast is a really interesting thing as well. So many, basically everyone in this cast is famous and is someone who is good but might not have been that famous in 2007. Like it was Ken Jeong's film debut and I really like him. And there's a stand-up special of his on Netflix that's quite good where he talks about what a break it was for him and stuff. And yeah, lots of very, very good people.
Okay. It's got Harold Ramis in it, which is great.
As the Jewish dad.
And one thing that I didn't remember at all was Alan Tudyk and Kristen Wiig as the TV execs.
Yeah,
I did not remember.
Kristen Wiig, I had no idea that she was in this.
Yeah, I didn't remember that whatsoever. And they were really funny, and I didn't remember their characters at all. But I thought those scenes worked incredibly well. And I kind of enjoyed seeing her at work and that kind of work environment thing, even though it's not something that people necessarily remember about this movie. I thought it was really well done, and I thought it was very, very funny.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I was going to say Jay Baruchel. He is Canadian, and where it has the tattoo of the maple leaf, that's his real tattoo.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I saw I watched a documentary a couple of years ago about hockey enforcers, you know, like the fighting goon blokes, and he was in it talking like really knowledgeably about hockey, and he's great.
Okay.
A big fan of him.
Is he like the light side of the mirror to Josh Duhamel eggs?
Yeah, definitely. He's that Josh Duhamel is the evil twin. Yeah, for sure. Who escaped Canada and went on a rampage.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, bloody hell. Look at the time. How have we managed to talk for this long?
I know. We talked a lot about Games of Thrones, didn't we?
We talked a lot about Game of Thrones. And we talked a lot about Swim Fan. I think that's where we went wrong. Do you have anything else you want to say about this movie?
No, I think we've said more or less everything. I just wanted to mention a bit when there's quite a few good, quite good pop cultural references that are quite funny. Some of them are a bit dated, but there's one where they're in the club and they're talking, for some reason he brings up the film Munich, which is really weird, and then talks about how good Eric Banner is in Munich, and then he says, if any of us get laid tonight, it's because of Eric Banner in Munich. And that I was absolutely gone at that. Mainly because we talked like some episodes ago about how awesome Eric Banner is and how we love him. So I was like, yes, it's true. See, I felt validated.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I suppose, again, that's a real sign of the times, because Munich was a couple of years before this and got a lot of nominations, including Oscar noms. Won some Golden Globes, stuff like that. So it was a very well-respected movie at the time, and it is one that's kind of been forgotten about a little bit now, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
But it kind of really pinpoints when this movie was around that Munich would be a talking point at all. It's very sort of in the couple of years after it came out.
Yeah, like, who's talking about Munich now?
Exactly. But it is good. Might go watch it. Get some Eric Banner on the go.
Yeah, I love Eric Banner. He's so handsome.
He is brilliant. I genuinely love him an awful lot.
Yeah, and also the thing about this film as well is that it's that kind of male fantasy of like a schlubby guy sleeping with a beautiful woman, which doesn't happen. It's not real. Not to be a conspiracy theorist, but it's always like, oh yeah, as if she would ever entertain spending any time with a schlubby guy like him.
Well, I am living proof of the opposite, Paddy.
Yeah, me too.
It's funny, isn't it? It's weird that they kind of set it up as that. Oh my god, she's so hot and I'm such a stoner loser boy. Oh
yeah, that just feels a bit tired these days, doesn't
it's a
it?
Bit of a cliche, and I suppose it was kind of a cliche at the time that it came out, but
yeah,
you know, nowadays when we do a movie like that, we like it to be all about catfishing someone and framing it in a positive manner and gender swapping it.
Yeah, if it's gender reversed, it's fine.
A lot of the time, it
and
is
they had
fine.
Internet in it.
Yeah, if it's got the internet in it, then it's fine, and then it can be about.
See, Swim Fan had internet in it. Good film.
Exactly. Knocked Up also has internet in it. Also good film.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, kind of just about gets over the line. Knocked Up is the guy at the marathon recently who was wearing the Big Ben outfit, who couldn't get over the... Do you remember that video?
No.
There's this guy wearing a Big Ben outfit.
I have to look this up.
Who was coming to the end of the marathon, running, you know, like, well done, lad, you've worn the costume. But then the tower of his Big Ben was too tall to get under the banner. So...
The Eric Banner.
So he had to then sort of try and duck under it and couldn't quite do it. So he had to get someone to then help him cross the line, which is, I don't know, there's something beautifully like funny about it.
That's poetry. British poetry.
And that's what Knocked Up is, apart from its tower, is useless bro humour and a runtime that is absurdly long for a film.
It is
time.
Way too long. Yeah, you could shave half an hour off.
It feels... I was just about to say the same thing. You can shave half an hour off. It feels long. It's probably... What is it, about 2 hours long?
It's over 2 hours.
Yeah. And you could quite happily get rid of half an hour and it would still be just as concise and, you know, it still works structurally without that half hour of extra... like filler.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, right, so a little bit of trivia for you, shall I?
Yep, hit me.
I will hit you when you least expect it.
With my rhythm stick.
So this is Seth Rogen's first leading role.
I did know that, yes, and he's supposed to be 23 years old, and it made me realize he's actually younger than I thought.
Oh really? How old?
He's not that much younger than us. I think he's actually kind of ageless, isn't he? Let's see. Seth Rogen. Oh, he was born in 1982, so he's 37.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would have definitely put him in like the late 70s category.
Yeah, I felt like by now he was he should be in his 40s.
Yes, yeah. So this film is it's partly based on Judd Apatow's real life, and the birth of his first daughter with Leslie Mann. Which is interesting. And like, there's sort of lots of elements there that sort of a parallel to their lives and their situation at the time, which I think is a quite interesting way to do it. And I quite like it when movies have that frame of reference to real life. Like,
when Harry Met Sally, we were talking about that last time, how Rob Reiner based it on his own divorce.
Exactly. Yeah. And The Big Sick as well, you know, is a real, big example of that. I think taking a real world situation you've been through and putting that comedic spin on it, it allows you to keep that human element. And I think the human element of Knocked Up is what works so well. It's good. I like that. I like that it's based on real life stuff. And the kids are Judd Apatow's daughters.
Yes, I did know that. So
and pretty much all of their dialogue was improvised as well, which is brilliant.
Oh, I did not know that.
Those human moments are what makes this movie interesting, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And those are the things that you can tell that they put a lot into it from that point of view. They just got bogged down in foolishness.
Yes.
But, you know, 2007 was a very different time.
Indeed it was. So I'll end the trivia with one bit of foolish trivia for you.
Bill Hader, love me some foolish trivia.
Bill Hader was originally meant to play one of Ben's group of friends. The part was recast because he looked too old.
That's really unfair. Because he appears in one of the other scenes briefly, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he looks the same age as any of them.
Yeah, it's very sad. I feel for him.
How old even is Bill Hader? He's not that old.
So he is. Let's have a look. He was born in 1978. So he's not that much older than them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel for you.
He looks like Zac Efron's responsible older brother.
Yeah, yeah. Zac's down at the park and he's going too hard on the swings, and Bill Hader's there on the side, like smoking a menthol cigarette, and sort of looks up and is like, "Don't do that, Zac. Gonna hurt yourself."
Yeah.
And then Zac Efron.
And when he's a little
off.
Bit older, yeah. Well, he falls off, he picks him up. When he's a little bit older, you know, he picks him up from house parties, makes sure he gets home all right, and he hydrates so he doesn't get a hangover.
Yeah, and he covers for him when he comes home drunk and he's like, oh, you know, he's just out with his friends, that kind of thing. He's the good older brother. Good surly older brother.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's it. That's it for trivia. How are we going to rate this bad boy?
Oh, good question. How many mushrooms would it take for you to want to go to see a Cirque du Soleil show?
Oh God, that is a...
There's a bit where they go to see Cirque du Soleil and he's like, oh. No, first he's like, I've got a bag of mushrooms. And he's like, well, save them because we're going to go see Cirque du Soleil in Vegas. And that made me laugh because, yeah, I would only go and see Cirque du Soleil if it was on mushrooms.
I mean, I was going to say this. it is going to be a pretty... In real life, it would be an awful lot of mushrooms to get me to go and see Cirque du Soleil. But in this situation, let's go with a 12, I'd say.
Yeah,
12 mushrooms.
I think that's about fair. I'll also give it a 12. You know, it's good. 6 out of 10. Solid.
Yeah, it was enjoyable to watch. It hasn't aged very well. I wouldn't necessarily think about watching it again anytime soon.
No.
Whereas films
but
like
I'm glad that I did.
Marshall, yeah, I'm glad that I did. But films like Forgetting
Having
Sarah
not
Marshall,
seen it for a while, it was...
To...
Yeah, it was fresh.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it's fine. Fine film.
Yeah, it doesn't have like a vampire puppet musical or anything.
No, precisely. 0 out of 20, no vampire puppets.
Yeah.
So what are we watching next?
Well, I had a few different ideas, but I realized, you know, whilst I was thinking about Kevin Bacon the other day, that I've never seen Footloose, the original Footloose from 1984. And I felt like we hadn't done a musical in a while, so I feel like we should do Footloose.
I thought you were going to throw me a curveball there and be like, oh, you know, I was thinking about Kevin Bacon the other day. And, you know, I've never seen Footloose, so that's why we're going to watch Tremors.
Is there any romance in Tremors?
He falls in love
from
with
the love between a man and a worm.
Love between a worm and human
a giant
fish.
Worm. Yeah.
He falls
I suppose
in love
we
with
could.
A geologist. No, no.
I can't even remember it. I can only remember the big worms.
I don't think we can justify Tremors on this podcast. Maybe in October, maybe.
Yeah.
But no, Footloose. You sure you don't want to watch the remake?
Well, maybe we could save that for a future episode. But I'd rather watch the proper old version first.
Yes, definitely. I don't think I've watched this film in well over a decade, so let's get on it.
Yeah. Looks good.
Excellent. Alrighty. Stuff.
Cool. Well, I think I don't have anything else to say, so I think we should leave it there.
Yes. So what did you think of Knocked Up, dear listeners? Did you enjoy it as much as when you first saw it? Had you seen it before? Did you think
have you been knocked up?
Did you think it was about gangsters punching each other and saying, "Oh, get you knocked up, mate.
Oh, knock you up, my son.
Knock you up, my mate. Oh."
Yeah, that's what it means in British. It just means punching someone.
Get knocked up.
We'll go get knocked up. That's what's going to be happening after Brexit.
Yeah, that's pure Brexit. Post-Brexit.
Or probably tomorrow, because I hear Theresa May's in bad shape. I think she's going to get knocked up, my son.
She's going to get knocked up by our lad Boris. Ooh.
Yeah. He's definitely got some powerful fists to knock people up.
There's certainly a lot of flesh on them.
Yeah. He is just sort of a ball of flesh with straw on top that knows Latin, isn't he?
That is the perfect. That's the perfect description of Boris Johnson. A ball of flesh with straw on top that knows Latin.
I mean, you could follow that with various expletives, of course.
You could, yeah. But instead, we'll just say thank you for listening, dear listeners.
Yeah, thanks a lot for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. Obviously, yeah, we had a bit of a break, and now we're back to our regular schedule, which is great. So, yeah, here we go. I hope you're enjoying it. And as always, get in touch on the Twitter at BigBoysDon'tPod, emails BigBoysDon'tCryPodcast@gmail.com. Rate, comment, subscribe through wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be on there. Leave us ratings and reviews. Always very, very much appreciate it. Always love to hear from you.
Yes. Give us your feedback. Give us your comments. It's what we live off.
Yeah. But if it's bad feedback, we'll knock you up.
We'll knock you up, mate. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Right. Let's go.
Bye-bye.
Bye.